For 10 days a year, West Hawaii celebrates its coffee culture, and there's plenty to celebrate. The industry has survived the coffee borer berry beetle, the pest that has threatened its survival, and seems to be thriving today. In advance of this weekend's start to the Kona Coffee and Cultural Festival, we talked with coffee consultant Sean Steinman about the way Kona coffee has hung on to its status as a luxury item.
The industry has done a really good job of presenting itself as being a specialty product. Mm-hmm. And I think even though not all of the coffee it produces is really geeky, I think enough people are turning to it and there's enough promotion that they're trying it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's enough wealthy people out there also who can afford it. And I think the reputation is as strong as ever.
When you say geeky, you're referring to the gourmet coffee audience, which seems to be growing, yeah?
Yes. Not just gourmet in the I want to appear to be gourmet, but mm-hmm. the people who really want complexity,
mm-hmm.
the folks who want their coffee not to taste like coffee, but to taste like something else.
The people who actually know what you're talking about when you talk about the nose and all
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. That seems rather pretentious.
Yeah. What are you talking about when you talk about that stuff? Well, you know, what do terms like that refer to that the real coffee connoisseur understands?
It's really just like I mentioned, you know, when you can taste coffee or wine or cheese or chocolate, and you can taste other things.
Uh-huh.
And they're not complicated things. Sometimes it's a fruit that you're familiar with. Sometimes it's a sweet thing you're familiar with. But you taste it in that object, and it really tastes like it's there. It's not there, of course. Nobody's added it. But maybe the molecules are similar or the same, or there's just the way your brain's working. But all of a sudden, you get it tasting like something and smelling like something that's not coffee.
What are some of the notes that are heard or felt in Hawaii coffee?
I think in Hawaii we get a lot of citrus, mostly lemon, but occasionally some other things seem familiar.
Mm-hmm.
We get some nutty and spicy. We get chocolatey. We could definitely get fruity, sometimes floral.
How do you go about introducing something like that? Can you set out to have a coffee that, you know, has a lily koi note to it?
Or? To create it, you mean?
Yeah.
No, we have no idea how that happens.
Really?
There's a couple of good steps to take, right? You might choose a different variety. You might try to grow at a particular temperature or higher mm-hmm. elevation. And that will increase your chances for something like that happening.
Mm-hmm.
But we really have no idea. We know that something that's quite new, actually, is after you harvest coffee, you've got to get all the layers off and dry it down.
Right.
And one of the ways we traditionally get off the layers is you squeeze off the fruit and there's a sticky mucilage and you can soak that in water overnight and it ferments.
Uh-huh.
You can, much like you can with beer or wine, you can populate that fermenting with yeasts, particular yeasts, and that has an influence on the end flavor. Not a huge influence, but a little bit. And we're just learning now that this is true and that we can do it.
What's the end result? Something like beer / coffee? Or?
It's not beery, it's just more complexity. Maybe more fruit, more flour, less edge, less bitter, less negative things, and can be more positive things. Now, I've tasted some of these experiments that have gone wrong, just the way you might with beer or wine.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like we have the answers, but we know that we can. But this is one more place where flavor can happen.
Well, tasting the stuff that's gone wrong is part of your job at the front lines.
Right? Yeah, of course. It's really fascinating, actually.
Does the fermented coffee product have alcohol in it?
Not the coffee itself. The liquid does. Because what happens is that the critters are eating this sugary substance in the water. And they ferment, they make alcohol, and it's in that liquid. But then we throw that out.
Uh-huh. What would it be if you kept it? Would it be something like the fermented tea that we were seeing, kombucha?
Oh, that's a good question.
Let's create a new product right here and now, Sean.
It's a great idea. You know, people have tried a lot to make alcohol from coffee waste products like the fruit and the mucilage.
Right.
But I've never seen it available, which makes me think that it's not that good.
You can't hold back from discovery with things like that, Sean.
Right.
Who knows?
Somebody will drink the alcohol.
Well, you know, combining booze and coffee meets a lot of people's dreams, wouldn't mm-hmm. you think?
Irish coffee, classic pairing.
There you go. How many different really important growing centers are there in the Hawaiian Islands these days? How many different islands are giving us coffee? We hear about Molokai, Maui, who else?
Yeah,
Big
Hawaii,
Island, obviously.
Big Island, and here mm-hmm. on Oahu.
Mm-hmm.
So five islands concertedly growing coffee, and within islands, various regions. So the Big Island, there's four defined regions. The way the state defines regions in Hawaii is by county.
Uh-huh.
So there's only one county on Oahu, so
right.
There's only one, technically one political designation, but there's folks growing coffee in Manawili, and there's folks growing coffee on the North Shore. So do we want to separate those geographically? I think so, but...
Well, when you define a region, as you say, four different regions on Hawaii Island, what are the criteria? Elevation, soil, that kind
of
thing?
No, it's strictly political. So the district of Hamakua, the district of Kau, district of Kona, and the district of Hilo.
But from the coffee point of view...
What becomes more important?
You draw an entirely different map.
Yes, absolutely. So that question leads to a bigger idea of how is flavor and place connected? Right, that's really what we're after.
That was the question I was trying to ask you.
Right. Is there really something about a place that makes a flavor?
Yeah.
And for almost any crop, the answer is unknown from a scientific perspective. Generally dubious that a place itself, or maybe I should be more specific, a specific thing about a place, right? The soil itself, or the climate itself, or mm-hmm. the humidity itself. Probably mm-hmm. any one of those things is not important. But a combination of things, and the combination of how a farmer interacts with that, and they interact with the genetics, all these things probably influence mm-hmm. the end. Well, we know they influence the end taste.
We're always hearing those claims about wine, though. It's from this or that region, and that makes all the difference. So those are somewhat dubious, those claims?
It's dubious because from a soil science perspective, it's hard to explain why that might happen. It doesn't mean it isn't happening, mm-hmm. but no one's been able to prove it or explain it.
Huh.
What someone has come up with, which is really interesting, and this is goes to the same idea in coffee we were just talking about, how the yeast that you use to ferment could influence flavor.
Yeah.
With wine, you can imagine different regions where wine is grown, that there are different microorganisms on the fruit. Mm-hmm. So when you go to ferment that wine, those organisms, in fact, are what's playing the role in the flavor versus the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And something else we don't tend to think about a lot with production of these products is that there's a lot of steps involved in fermenting wine or brewing or creating coffee to be roasted. And each of those steps can do something. And historically, people have just done it and hoped they got it right. And when they got it right, they just kept doing that same thing. But as we learn more and more about the scientific process that's going on, we modify the process and we clean it up. So a great example with wine is how wine has always been done in wood barrels, but there's a lot of variation there. If you can do wine in a metal barrel that you can clean and sterilize, all of a sudden you can fine-tune your product to become consistent with it. And it's going to be different than those sort of random wine barrel bits. And what we're learning then is the idea of terroir, the idea that flavors from a place might not be from the soil place, but from all the little things that influence it that we don't even think about.
Critters living in the soil.
Critters, human action, mistakes, mm-hmm. traditions. You know, like the story about, it's a great story about a meat plant somewhere that had, you know, the person would get their, would finish a product and they had to wheel it around the company to get it to this next destination. And the company finally built a new place, and they had a cleaner system, and they didn't have to make that chaotic
uh-huh.
travail. And the product didn't taste the same. And there was something that was happening while the person was walking around with the stuff, that uh-huh. some environmental accident.
Probably some impurity that happened to taste good.
Or like you walked through a certain room, and there's something in that room that landed on it. I don't remember the bit of the story.
The
but
point of the story.
Right. But there was something. I think it was a This American Life story, actually.
Yeah.
And it was a great story.
Well, you know, the whole idea that there are things to be learned in a subject that's been as studied as long as coffee has is encouraging in a way.
Very encouraging. I mean, I'm an academic at heart, so to me, of course, it's charming at best. At worst.
Well, what would you most like to know, you know, if you were given one mystery of coffee growing to unravel? What kind of questions would you want answered?
I really want to approach that problem of how does this thing we're doing create this taste? Or what are the things that I'm doing in those tastes? How much can I, as a farmer, create or alter the flavor by fertilizing, by watering, by, you know, what kind of fertilizer? Or am I using chemicals? Do any of these things really, they have a true effect, or are they an accidental effect?
Yeah.
I'm a scientist who cares about taste, and so I want to That's what I want to play with. If I were going to be an academic the rest of my career, that's what I would do.
It's kind of what variables do what, in a sense.
Yeah, and then you can consciously manipulate them. Right. Oh, I want my coffee to be more like this, so I'm going to do this thing. I'm like, that to me is neat.
Sean Steinman is the owner of Daylight Mind Coffee Company and the founder of Coffea Consulting, which conducts research on the science of coffee, including biochemistry, entomology, brewing, and sensory analysis. He's one of the organizers of the competition at the Kona Coffee Cultural Festival, which runs from November 3rd to the 12th at various locations around West Hawaii. You can find details in today's edition of the Conversation Podcast on HawaiiPublicRadio.org.